Welcome back to Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance here, live from the Kintec studio. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Lots of thoughts coming in through the crossover and about last night's game as well. Denny's, true north taste awaits with Denny's. 100% Canadian beef burgers made with new shredded iceberg lettuce on a brioche bun and all the classic ingredients you love. Jason Buchla will join us at 1 o'clock. Excited to get Books's thoughts on the game last night and just the position that the Canucks find themselves in right now. Books brought the fire on Friday when he was in studio, so looking forward to more of that, as he always does, really. I don't know how much we have to really dig into the X's and O's and the details of that game against Buffalo last night. I mean, we talked about the general lack of energy in the building from both teams, and then as a result from the fans as well in that loss. The way I would describe it is it felt like watching two lottery teams playing out the string in the like final week of the season. You know, like an April 2nd game between two lottery teams that don't even have a chance at making the playoffs. There's not even like fake stakes attached to it. It's just a game on the NHL schedule that you are mandated to play. So you show up and you go through the motions. That's what the energy in the building felt like. And that's pretty damning when you consider, you know, everything surrounding the team right now. Like, is there any chance? You know, we've gotten a lot of people texting in like, hey, can they get on a run and shake this off? And hey, then Miller stays. And, you know, you earn the right to stay together as a group by your performance.
Yeah,
we don't see a lot of that. We don't see a lot of evidence that that's in the cards.
But also just stop ascribing this like heroic turnaround. You know what I mean? Like, you're fitting. I get it. We're used to fitting our hopes and dreams onto the laundry of the teams we cheer for, right? Like, that's the fan experience. So I get it. But as I said yesterday, like, there's always going to be another Nashville game. There's always going to be another benching. There's always going to be another with this mix.
And you just think about that game, right?
It's like, just, it's time to accept that.
Yeah.
The
evidence is pretty overwhelming.
Well, I think
at this
the organization's accepted it.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Like, you're.
Because
you're holding out more hope than the people inside?
Rick Tocchet says before the game, right? I mean, he was asked about the chance to string consecutive wins together for the first time in almost 2 months, right? December 1st.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, you know, that would be an easy thing to downplay. Like, oh, that's not that big a deal, winning back consecutive games. But he was like, yeah, that would be great. That would be good. Like, that would be really good for our confidence. That would go a long way. They got a chance to go out and do it. No urgency whatsoever for most of the game.
The bottom team in the East who played the day before and had like an angry, coach's angry, let's go to work morning skate. Like an intense morning skate in between back-to-back games, albeit, you know, the game the day before was earlier in the day. They were probably in town by 7 p.m. last night or the night before. There's no excuse for that. And I think you brought up a good point because I was thinking it myself. Like, Owen Power fought the puck all night. Rasmus Dahlin's decision making was, you know, I don't want to like use like a word like brutal, but questionable throughout the evening. I thought Dylan Cousins had a miserable time out there. I thought Alex Tuch barely moved his feet, and that's wild because Alex Tuch can vroom,
really good at moving his feet.
He can vroom through everybody. How many times did you see Alex Tuch enter the Canucks zone with possession? Twice,
yeah,
and it was all in the first period.
Yeah,
they had one guy going, and it was JJ Paterka. Now, luckily for them, JJ Paterka was going to the point where he was, you know, drawing wild penalties on Quinn Hughes, so he had an unbelievable game. He's a really good player, really like him, but it's not like they were good.
No, the number of
the Canucks didn't even face Buffalo's haymaker punch.
The number of plays and passes that Buffalo had that were either really poorly thought out or really poorly executed or some combination of both. Like, there were moments where I was legitimately yelling at my TV at Buffalo, just as like a fan of hockey. I was like, what are you doing? That's not how you do it.
How about
That's
this?
Not what you're doing.
How about this? Buffalo didn't have their leading goal scorer in the lineup.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, like, there's no excuse.
And
there's no excuse to be to lose that game the way the Canucks did.
On the point about just Buffalo and where they were in the opposition last night, you know, from Rick Tocchet's post game, We won't play the clip here, but, you know, I think people have seized on the as a microcosm of our season, right? You know, we need guys to step up in moments, all of those. The answer that stood out to me asked about the poor performance in the third period, giving up the lead. And the quote more or less was, you know, some of the guys in these situations, they just kind of stand around almost like it's too big for them. And the that part, almost like it's too big for them, really stood out to me. Because, hey, it's the NHL. Every game in some level is a big deal, right? Every game is an entertainment product. There's one of 82 of the year, 2 points up for grabs. Every game is a big deal. Having said that, on the scale of NHL games, last night, a midweek January game against the last place team in the Eastern Conference. Like, that's what you joke about when you're trying to think of the lowest stakes possible game. You're like, oh, you know, it's tough sometimes when you're playing Columbus on a Tuesday. It's hard to get that energy up, right? Like, yeah. This is Buffalo on a Tuesday in January.
Game 48.
And it's like, sometimes it's too big for them. Like, it doesn't get smaller than that in the NHL. That's the small game on the NHL schedule. It's not a big game on the NHL schedule. So, as you said, the organization is telling us in many different ways, from management to the coaches, kind of how they see this group right now. And it's a group that holding a one goal lead in the third period at home to the 30th place team in the league, last place team in the Eastern Conference, that's a moment that can be too big. Like, that's very, very damning. And that's directly from the coach himself last night on the podium.
Yeah. And so, look, I'm not going to do the optimistic thing, but I do want to note that, so the last 10 games, Canucks have gone 3-5-2. Okay?
Yeah.
It's the same record, by the way, as the Chicago Blackhawks.
2-5-3.
No, 3-5-3. Oh, 3-5-2. I had it wrong when I was talking pre-show.
Okay.
Pulled it up to make sure before I said it on air. So that's
smart.
Yeah, right? And then you outed me. Thanks, buddy.
Well, I was like, oh no, he's gotten it wrong. I thought you reversed the 3 and 2 in your mind.
No.
But anyways, you did the research.
Yeah. 3-5-2 in their last 10 games. So they've won 3 of 10. Two of those losses are past regulation, obviously, in Washington and in Montreal.
Yep.
And so they've beat, effectively, we're talking about the Sharks, the Leafs, and the Oilers. Okay? A nice little platter of teams.
The Kraken. They beat the Kraken in overtime.
Okay. So the Sharks are out of
this sample. The Sharks is out of this sample.
Okay, good. Really killing it with this introduction. Mm-hmm. Over the course of these games, if we look just at 5-on-5, okay, the Canucks have actually, they're above 50% by shot attempts. They've outshot their opponents by 12, but they've been outscored 12-9. Okay, and the reason for that is mostly that they've got the worst goaltending in the NHL across these last 10 games, 8.82 save percentage, 5-on-5. And only the Anaheim Ducks and the Ottawa Senators are shooting at a lower clip, 6.3%.
Mm-hmm.
Now, longtime listeners will know I look at this sort of body of data, teams controlling 50% of their attempts, they're outshooting their opponents 5-on-5, they're just not finishing, they're just not getting goaltending, and I usually say, hey, this team's going to regress. But there's a couple other things going on that give me pause here, right? That give me pause from sort of, like, I do think that this team's overall talent level is still playoff caliber. And by the way, I think it probably still would be even if you moved JT Miller, depending on the return, of course.
Yeah.
But I still think you'd be in the mix with St. Louis and Calgary
and Utah
from a talent perspective. Well, maybe not Utah. I think Utah's better than Vancouver now. So subtract JT Miller, and I definitely think that. Here's the problem, right? The Canucks are generating, only the Capitals somehow, are generating shots at a lower rate, right? Now, no team's giving up fewer shots, but the Canucks are effectively, like, their defense isn't just great defense. It's the product of removing oxygen from the game.
Yeah.
Right? They are paying, robbing Peter to pay Paul. They are removing events from their game, and that's responsible for why they're defending well. There's just nothing going on. And frankly, while the 5-on-5 numbers look good, I think, and you could see it in that first period, like, neither team had good chances, but Buffalo had better ones. You know, I think that really stood out throughout the game, with the exception of that one shift in the second period. I guess the Canucks were the better team in the second period.
They were the better team in the second period,
for
sure.
And then I thought they pressed pretty well after they lost the lead, but, you know, that's a pat on the head type point
awarded.
when you're playing coin flip hockey, when you don't have any offensive juice as a group, and sort of as I said during the crossover, then you throw onto it the fact that this team doesn't have that like plucky good vibes, more than the sum of their parts work ethic night to night. What do you have? Right. And that's kind of where I feel like this team is. Like their talent level is still higher than most of these other chase pack teams looking for that second, angling for that second wildcard spot. But it kind of doesn't matter if your vibes are off and you can't score.
Yes.
And that's where the Canucks are at.
And even, you know, as you're saying, if you look at the underlying numbers over the last 10 games, maybe it suggests more of like a 500 record, right, than what they've done, than going well below 500 or maybe a hair above 500. You know,
realistically, they've got 8 points across these 10 games. Like, yeah, should they have more than 10 or 11 on
that's
form?
What I
don't think so.
That's what I mean. So even if you like regress to what their underlying form suggests over the last 10 games, you're regressing to, as you said, like 11 points in 10 games. So it's not as if it's like, oh, wow, they could actually look like a really dangerous team if they just start getting some of the breaks at a normal rate again, right? It's even the ceiling based on their underlying numbers right now is very, very low. And I think that's one of the big reasons for frustration, because as much as everyone says, oh, this is low event hockey and it's slog and I really don't like watching it, and I understand that. In a vacuum, I would way rather watch a high event, fun offensive team as well, of course, you know, if you're taking winning and all of that out of it, of course. But low event teams can still be fun to root for and fun to watch if, as you say, the vibes are good, if you get the sense that the players are committed, that the players are bought in, that there's a certain intensity. And we're not seeing that with the Canucks. So it's hard to even get too excited about the low event thing. And I think the other thing is often the teams that are defensive first, but still kind of become, you know, sentimental favorites for their fan base, usually it's because there's a talent deficit and they're making up for it with their hard work and their defensive mentality.
Totally. And by the way, that can be fun to watch.
That's what I mean. That can be
scrappy,
like,
underdogs.
That can be like a heroic team that people remember fondly decades down the road.
Heck,
it's like,
yeah,
wow, they didn't have a lot, but man, they gave it their all. This team feels like it's wasting talent.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, they're too talented to be playing like this, but it's all they can do, and they seem miserable doing it. So, yes, it's because it's low event, and that's one of the reasons it's such a slog. But again, low event teams can be beloved teams, can be fun teams to watch and fun teams to root for. This team just doesn't have any of that other stuff going for it right now, and it feels like they're too talented for this.
Yeah, and the other thing I want to talk about really quickly, just in the vein of what we're discussing, because, Dhaliwal brought it up during the crossover, which is the criticism, the increasingly widespread criticism of Rick Tocchet. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, I do think that Tocchet is bumping into the same issue that we've been talking about since the advent of our show, which is the can you both defend and score problem,
mm-hmm,
which this club has run into a multitude of times.
Under Travis Green, Bruce Boudreaux, and now Rick Tocchet.
Yeah. And realistically, like the times that they've got it done, the times that it has appeared for extended stretches like they'd cracked the puzzle, not only did it end up evaporating, right? But it was like when Travis Green got training camp with the team and 25 games, and then Boudreaux took over and turned the dial,
yeah,
but still
point.
Had Green's structure, you know?
Yeah.
And then when Boudreaux had to put it all in himself, it didn't work. And the other time, obviously, was last season when the team shot the lights out at a historic clip.
Because even the Boudreaux time, you could point a lot of that on Demko. You know what I mean? The
totally.
Seeming ability,
oh, yeah,
to defend. A lot of that was what Thatcher Demko was doing there.
And they led the league in penalty differential and on and on. So the truth is that I think Tocchet's bumping into the same issue that this club has had forever, frankly, like forever. That this core's entire existence has been defined by the question of can they both attack and defend at a high enough level at the same time. And for the most part, the answer has been no, with a couple of short-lived exceptions. That's and not that short-lived, like 6 to 7 months, but no one's durably been able to solve that issue because, you know, I still think it's fundamentally a horses issue, right? I still think that it's fundamentally that this team is, I mean, look, you look at their lineup last night. You've got Pugh Suter on the second line, which is fine. I like that. I think that's a perfectly good place for him to play. But you've got Sherwood, Heinen, and Bluger on the third, mm-hmm, line as a result. I mean, that's a fourth line caliber line, right?
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to what this team has often had, where you've got like Garland elevating guys,
yep,
in a third line role. And then you've got a fourth line like DiGiuseppe, Max Sisson, and Hoglander. I mean, Hoglander, I think, is a credible top nine option in the league, even though he struggled this season. But, I mean, I'm not sure Max Sisson's an everyday NHL player for the next 3 years. Are you?
No.
And Phil DiGiuseppe, I mean, an honest worker, right? Like, I think he's an NHL-caliber fourth-line guy, I guess. It's not his fault. The point being that, like, it's not like forward depth is a strength of this team right now, and it's partly because you don't have the first-line winger to put Garland on the third line, right? And arguably, you don't have the first-line winger to put Suter at third-line center, where all of a sudden you're starting to feel, you're feeling a lot better about a Garland-Suter Heinen third line or a Garland-Suter-Sherwood third line, right? So there's that issue, and then there's obviously the blue line stuff where, I mean, Hughes plays with Mark Friedman last night. You've got Buffalo's speed sort of overwhelming Vancouver second and third pairs throughout the evening. You've got Carson Soucy struggling this season relative to the form he hit last year, and on. Like, this team's still, we've been saying this for so long that it's almost going to bring me to tears to do it again. This team's short a couple of top six forwards and a couple
Top four defensemen.
We've been talking about this for years.
Yeah. And that's why this text comes in. So are you guys saying coaching is the problem and this group deserves another chance with another coach?
No. So this is the other thing I appreciate. Sorry, just really quick.
Yeah, go ahead.
The difference this time is that when we were having these conversations in the past, I felt pretty confident that if more appropriately surrounded, this core could still get it done. And I no longer feel that right now. I've been out on this core at times in the past too, to be totally honest with you, before Quinn Hughes became a supernova.
Yeah.
So it's not like I've consistently believed in this core group, but you know, the inability to elevate one another, I think is at this point, like, in this league, you really do have to have your entire organization built around getting the most out of your best players. I think that's essential. And those players ultimately have to hold each other accountable, because coaches' dirty little secret in the league is you can't hold.
Yeah.
Organizations can barely hold players accountable. It has to be self-driven. It has to be something that the room and the core finds itself. I don't know that this core has ever found that. And I think that's one of the fundamental issues that we've bumped into. And that's not a reflection on all of them. It's not a reflection on Quinn Hughes' leadership, because Quinn Hughes has clearly found a way to do it to himself and I think has elevated everyone he ever plays with. But it's not enough, right? There needs to be more guys leveling up with him. So you've got this core issue, you've got this talent issue, and then you've got the wider issue of how this team's built and them bumping into the same issues that they've been hitting for 6 years. And it's just like, you know, maybe you're going to try it with a new coach down the line, but I don't know that anyone's getting more out of this group than Talk is.
And look, if you want to argue with me or put forth the argument that Rick Tocchet's and the way he wants to play is not the best fit for this roster, okay, I'll hear that. Let's talk about that. Absolutely.
I think there's been choices made on the back end that have been influenced by Rick Tocchet's stylistic preferences that have exacerbated this team's issues from a puck-moving perspective.
Yep.
Not just in terms of its construction in the summer, but also in terms of, you know, preferring to utilize those types of players, right? Like, I've never pretended that Eric Brandstrom is a savior, but I do think that this team needs what he brings enough that he should be getting looks ahead of some guys who I think are in the same, like, seventh defenseman tier.
Yeah.
Just happen to have skill sets that Tocchet seems to be more. So
it's,
I
just
think there's valid grounds for
again,
criticism.
I think 100%. And is this, and am I sitting here and saying, like, Rick Tocchet should be the coach of the Canucks for the next 7 years and he's going to lead them to Stanley Cup? No, of course not.
Although I wouldn't have a problem with it. I think he's a good coach.
I think he's a good coach too. But again, it's not that he's above reproach in any way or above criticism. It's just that if you're expecting another coach to come in and magically unlock an extra like 20% from this team, I see no evidence to believe that's the case. And I think you have to get the other stuff you were talking about, the talent, the commitment from the core. You need that in place. Then you can start worrying if you have the right coach in place, right? Then you could be like, okay, is this the guy to maximize where we want to go? I just think it's so far down the pecking order of issues right now that it doesn't make a lot of sense to dwell on. As much as I don't want to just like give anyone a pass and say, oh no, we can't critique Rick Tocchet, I just think it's small potatoes.
I know we got to go, but Books will wait for us and I'll text him to say I'm sorry. So I just want to make this analogy really quick. Imagine this core is driving from Vancouver to Kelowna.
Okay.
Okay, so they're taking the Coca-Cola, and imagine that every coaching change is a wheel, like, popping. Now, not popping while they're driving at full speed on the Coca-Cola, because that would be extremely dangerous. Mm-hmm. But, like, you know, the tire pressure gauge comes on. Now, luckily for them, they've had multiple spares.
They came prepared.
They came prepared.
Yeah.
And every coach is a spare tire. When you put it on, this team can go 150 again. But not for very long,
mm-hmm.
right? Because the fundamental issue is they don't have a tire.
Yeah. It's like a donut that wears out after a while.
Like at some point, they're going to get to Merritt, and they should probably stop and get a proper tire as opposed to putting on another spare. That's where we're at, and I think that's the discussion we're having.
All right, we'll take a break here. Lots of good texts coming in as well. Good conversation in the inbox. 650-650, you can contribute as well. Jason Bukla joins us next here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650.
Hey, it's Vic Nizar. Have your say and join me on The People's Show with big takes and even bigger bets weekdays 3 to 4 on Sportsnet 650 or wherever you get your podcasts.
New Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drantz. We are broadcasting live from the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics working together with you in step 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Now joining us, as he does always on a Wednesday at this time, from Sportsnet's NHL coverage, former director of amateur scouting in the NHL as well, he is our pal, Jason Bukla. Books, what's going on, man?
What's going on, fellas? How are you?
We're doing well, but, I mean, it wasn't quite the spectacle that the 5-1 loss against LA was that you saw when you were out here. But, man, just another pretty dull, uninspiring affair last night between the Canucks and the Buffalo Sabres. You know, I compared it to kind of watching a couple of lottery teams play out the string in the last week of the season. Just, you know, okay, hey, it's on the schedule. I guess we got to show up and get through it. But that seems like kind of the vibe around the Canucks way too often these days.
Yeah, it's, as I'm sure you guys are aware, I wrote quite a as in-depth as I possibly could without boring everybody to death, because I had lots to say but didn't go all the way there. It's just a microcosm of the season, guys. They can't get any momentum. You know, it's one good one, one bad one. You got the Buffalo Sabres coming out west. The Buffalo's not exactly a wagon. They're coming off a good win against Edmonton. I'm not telling you anything you don't already know. I mean, it's just, it's completely puzzling. And, you know, the mental breakdowns in the third period when you're protecting a lead coverage-wise, you know, last week I was alarmed at where they put pucks and, you know, how they kind of game planned to you know, just kind of crawl back in it against L.A., then they come back real nice against Edmonton. They're in it. They're defending. They've got purpose. They got focus. And then last night, with 10 minutes left in the game against, honestly, not a very good team. No disrespect to the Sabres, but you never know what you're going to get from them. And it's just not good enough.
Books, I mean, the problem that I'm sort of bumping into is, when I look at the underlying form of this team, like, they're out shooting teams 5-on-5 more nights than not, including last night. They're, you know, probably getting out chance somewhat when you adjust it for quality, but it's not by a massive margin. I mean, they don't look hopeless in terms of the run of play. Their goaltending's been poor. Their finishing hasn't been good. The power play hasn't been good. I think where I'm bumping into issues here is usually a team with the sort of profile that I just described is one I'd say, hey, you look, their next 10 games probably going to look a lot better than the last 10. But for this team, it feels to me like their defensive accomplishments are more the result of stripping all risk from the game. Like, they're paying with what they're generating offensively to manufacture these defensive results. It's not a robust defensive team. It's a team that doesn't take any risks, doesn't try to generate anything. And in addition to that, in addition to not having juice, the vibes are off. It's not like they're a scrappy, hardworking team, you know, that's playing in a way that makes sense for like them to win because, you know, they're underskilled. Like, the vibes are off. There's no juice. I find it hard for me then to say, hey, their talent level indicates that they should be better than this.
Well, if you don't have, as we've discussed many times, if you don't have the first attributes, and that is, you know, that you're going to play fast and you're going to have a relentless compete as a group, the rest of it never matters. Your skill set is never going to rise to the occasion. And they're spotty with their compete. They're spotty with how they play the game, how they identify as a group. What I liked about the most last year when they were going really well was that in tight games, they transported it with authority. If nothing was there, they'd chip it deep. They'd attack with pace. They'd dig along the wall and make some plays. And on the back end, you know, a couple of things that stood out to me, especially watching them live on the back end, is that, outside of Hughes and Hronek's just coming back, but Myers transports it sometimes, but there wasn't a lot of playmaking in terms of putting pucks in the right area to attack off the rush. There's just not a lot going on. And they don't come up the ice as a unit of five, even four half the time. And there's just so much to unpack. So I always go back to right to the beginning. And that is, you know, you have to refuse to be outworked and you got to play with more detail than your opponent. And I can't say they do that, guys. It's just a fact. They don't identify as a hardworking team and they don't play with enough detail over the full 60 minutes. And it's nauseating to be frank. I mean, some of these guys are getting paid multi-million dollars. And I don't want to say they give up, but they're give a, you know what, meter sometimes and key moments of the game. It's just, they're just out of touch.
Well, and I think one of the tells on that kind of team-wide effort thing for me, Books, is the forecheck. And, you know, there's been a lot of talk here about, oh, the too much dump and chase. And, you know, fair enough, but they played dump and chase a lot last year too. But you know what they were really, really good at was the forecheck. They got in and they turned the puck over and they set up shop. And, you know, maybe it wasn't that dangerous even once they set up shop, but they got the puck and they possessed it in the offensive zone. And, you know, I know they've been missing Dakota Joshua for long stretches here. He hasn't been at the top of his game when he's been in the lineup for understandable reasons, and he's a great forechecker, but just top to bottom, that element of their game has been so different and so much worse than it was last year. And I think that speaks to, you know, what do you need to be a good forechecking team? Well, you need effort. And as you say, you need the attention to detail and how you're coming up the ice together. And it just hasn't been there for them this year.
No, the desire isn't there. I mean, Kiefer Sherwood leads by example. If I'm sitting on the bench and I'm watching Kiefer Sherwood do what he does and I'm the next man up and I've got a puck going through the neutral zone and let's just say it's a 3-on-3 rush or a 2-on-3 rush and I got to chip it deep, I'm getting on my horse to play like that. You know what I mean? Like to pull my weight, lead by example the way that he has clearly done most of the year. And like that whole dump and chase thing, people, you know, it's so easy to throw rocks and pinpoint all kinds of different things. I would argue that with their lack of detail defensively, that I'd sooner, even if they're not getting on it off the dump and chase the way that I want, I'd sooner have the puck there than trying to get too cute in the neutral zone and not have enough back pressure and exposing some of the things that we got going on in the back end, including the goaltending, which has just been average. So, it's there's nothing the matter with the game plan. It's just the fact that they're not getting after it. Let's just call it spade a spade. They're not competing hard enough. And this group needs a change. They need a wake-up call. It's about time that the inmates can't run the asylum here, fellas.
When you've got a situation where you're just in waiting mode, what can you learn about a team in moments where there's another shoe, it's been raised above the ground, we know it's going to drop, but in that interim sort of period, what do you learn about a group's professionalism? What do you look for as an evaluator, knowing that there's a ton of stuff going on in everyone's head as these sort of games are ongoing?
Yeah, I really like how you just positioned that because, you know, this is something that I really truly look for as a scout when I'm looking at younger guys coming through. If I can, I try and identify their performance on their worst days. And your worst days can be full of distraction. As a young athlete, it might be that you're still in high school, you failed your math exam, broke up with your girlfriend, could be a bunch of different things. When you get to this level in the National Hockey League and the group is struggling, you know, on your worst day and you're handsomely paid to play a kid's game, the pride, the professionalism, the B game effort has to be there. I will take a guy that plays with his hair on. I will take a 100-point guy who's struggling but plays with his hair on fire on his worst day over, you know, that and then it kind of masks the fact that, yeah, I want him to score, but at least I can appreciate the effort. And I can't get there with this group, guys. I can't consistently get there. And it's like some sulk. I'm tired of the excuses, to be frank. We're tight. We got distractions off the ice. You know what? Everybody, you know, all the three of us have distractions today. Jay, you know, kids at home, you know, whatever, myself. It could be a bunch of different things. You got to deal with it. You got to persevere. I hate the fact that they don't persevere and they don't play hard enough on their worst day. And, I'd shake it up. And the problem, and I know they're trying to shake it up with your answer, you're saying the shoe's about to drop, but the longer this goes on, understand that the value of what that's going to look like gets exponentially worse day by day, because you have a depressed value of asset management, and nobody does you a favor in this league when you need to make a change.
Yeah, and it's hard to see how the value goes up as well if the team is continuing to perform really, really poorly and just so inconsistently. And, you know, on the topic of JT Miller and obviously his name out there in a big, big way, we're all expecting a deal to get done at some point. I'm sure you've talked to people around the league on it. I mean, what kind of return, what kind of value do you think Canucks fans should be expecting when a deal does eventually get done, if it does, for JT Miller?
So, you know, I'm not an insider, but obviously I run into a lot of people. And I got to tell you that there's an appetite in this league for – it's really far-ranging. There's some teams that are really – some of the pro scouts that I talked to, their young group that they have coming along, they're buyer beware on this only because they really feel like they've got a good group of, they've got some synergy going with their developing players. And yes, he'd like to add a talented veteran guy like this and lead by example. But the problem is that on your off days, on his off days, he can be very, very hard on those types of kids. So that's, you know, they project that up the chain, if you will, to upper management. But then you got the other ones that are like, well, we're pretty close to being a contending team, and we think that our coach or our environment, our leadership group can wrestle him into being the best version of himself. So it's really far-ranging what the value of return is going to be. Carolina, I put in my piece that Carolina might look at doing something like a Martin Nikash, and I had Seelovs going the other way just because Carolina's got goaltending injury things, and maybe that helps them out a little bit. But I just have to tell you guys, it's really far-ranging. And on paper, there's a real chance, I would say 90% chance, that when this deal goes down, it's not going to look good on paper. You're going to lose the deal on paper, but the amount of money you save and have to reinvest in something else is going to be important. And here's my biggest argument, fellas. When this goes down, you might be able to save what's left of the character of this group right now and get a reset.
If you were to design a deal, not for the purpose of winning the trade on paper, because as you said, that's probably unlikely, but for the purposes of setting Vancouver up to sort of flip those assets again, almost do the Horvat Hronek sequence again, so that this club can be better again next year. What in designing that sort of, what would you be looking at?
Well, it's interesting because I have put that together. I'm still conflicted, right? Because I still think that this team, when they're going the right way, i.e. Saturday night, can be, you know, pretty good team. And so, you know, if you take a look at, if you were to flip Miller to an Eastern Conference team and you're going to save a few bucks on the transaction, and then you're going to get some assets back in terms of hopefully draft picks, where I struggle with it here, Drancer, and where it starts to fall apart is that I don't know if there's enough that you can reinvest in, say, going after another UFA. You'd want to get permission to speak to a UFA if you're going to bring him in, because I think they'd like to get a guy with term. But let's say they go after a guy like Brock Nelson. Let's just say. I mean, I think that would be a good fit. He's a great pro. I think that, you know, that would be, you got a guy comes in and plays the middle. does a lot of the things that you're looking for. And the coach would love the way he plays, but he's a UFA, so you'd want to have an opportunity to potentially speak to him ahead of that deal. The caveat in all of this is that I'm struggling to get past Miller without thinking what's going to happen to Besser in this equation, because now I really start thinking to myself, how much, you know, is this our year, or do we start punting it to next year in asset management a different way in the offseason, i.e. money, and then obviously with more draft capital, which gives you the flexibility. So, and what doesn't give you a straight line answer there, there's a lot to unpack, because I think Besser's not long for this either. And the longer this goes, you got to look at moving him as well, because I'm not re-signing Brock Besser in Vancouver. That's not on my radar. The only way I'm keeping him is if he's my own rental.
Well, I think you're right that it's a very complicated situation they find themselves in. It's not as simple as, okay, we'll trade JT Miller and then, you know, we'll see what happens after that. Hopefully we'll be good next year. I think one of the big complicating things, and it's a very good thing for the Canucks, but just Quinn Hughes's level is so high right now. Won the Norris last year, arguably even better this year, that even taking a step back away from competing, and I'm not talking about a rebuild or a teardown or anything like that, but even just like a step back for a year, it feels like a very difficult decision. Like you're wasting a year of this guy who's playing, you know, maybe better than anyone's ever played for this franchise right now. So I think whatever they do, and whether it's trade both of Messer and Besser and Miller, you know, just trade Miller, sign Besser, whatever the case is, they're going to have to, and I think they're going to be motivated to find a way to at least be close to competitive next year, as early as next year, even if this year's a write-off. And whether that's because, you know, you get a bunch of cap space and you go and sign some guys, or you get the futures and you flip them for a contributing piece, I just think Quinn Hughes is at such a high level right now that they're going to look for ways to still be competitive and try to be a cup competitor next season.
Oh, yeah, there's no doubt about it. This isn't a horrific hockey team. I mean, this has been a terrible year on a lot of different, you know, a month and a half ago, I was sitting here waiting for them to pop off because they were going to get guys back from injury. And, you know, I thought, okay, well, we've been kind of surviving and it looks okay. Let's wait for everybody to get back and we'll pop off. Well, that obviously hasn't happened. And now, yeah, to your point, nobody, trust me, it's exhausting. It's excruciating when you're going through getting close to where you want to go with really good players on your roster. And to your point, wasting a year, because that's how it feels. But you have to take the long view of it. And he's the captain of the team. He understands it. But his expectation, selfishly, and it's rightfully so, is that whatever we save for cap dollars and whatever we maybe bring in for draft capital, that we get creative and get aggressive. And they will. They will do that. But the Besser thing isn't happening for me. Like, if this team's hovering where they're at right now, guys, like, this is, it's not happening this year. You got to deal with reality. So Besser's gonzo for me in the next month, if this is to where it is right now. And the first shoe obviously is going to fall, hopefully sooner than later, for Miller. I was hoping, you know, Jay, when I talked to you the other day, I was saying, I hope by Monday that this is done.
Yeah.
And it was almost done.
It almost got done. Yep.
Yeah. But it still has to happen.
Yeah, I mean, I think there were a lot of people on the same page as you, just like, okay, let's get this done after that performance.
Including Canucks management, apparently.
Yeah, I was going to say, including Canucks management,
well,
apparently.
Can I just say one thing? And I don't know if you guys agree with this or not. It kind of feels to me like Saturday night's effort, they all know what's going on in the room. They're not dumb. Like, they know what's going on. It feels like they all pulled together for one night thinking, this might be the last hurrah, or I'm going to give everything I got tonight type thing. But then when it passed again, it was like a deadline pass. It's like, ugh, we still got to deal with it. I just, the mood is off.
Yeah, they're in purgatory now, basically, is how it feels. On Thatcher Demko, you know, he spoke after the game last night and said he hasn't been good enough since he returned from injury. He kind of lost touch with his game. And from a scouting perspective, you know, what are you seeing and how hard is it to evaluate this guy right now, considering obviously returning after a really long layoff with an unusual injury and, you know, adjusting to life without Ian Clark as his goalie coach right now? It feels tough to kind of get a handle on what exactly we're seeing from Thatcher Demko and kind of what the likelihood of him getting back to his level is sooner rather than later here.
Yeah. So on the coaching front, you know, Drancer, like Robbie Tallis has been in Florida forever, right? Mm-hmm. Had, you know, worked with Lou before Lou went to Vancouver, came back. And that is a thing. You know, it's like having a pitching coach that you really rely upon. He can see things in your game. And but I'm sure that Thatcher reaches out to him occasionally, or he's got enough in the bank that he knows like how he's been coached up in the past. And that's no disrespect to what's going on now. I'm just saying that I'm going to move that one to the side for a sec. It's really hard for a goalie coming off an injury that was a really obscure injury in the back of your mind, thinking about that. And then, you know, that weird fall for when he back spasms and yada, yada. No training camp, and you get into the heat of battle at this time of year, trying to stop pucks behind a team that's disjointed. You know, there's a lot to unpack there. But the thing of it is this. I just don't think that he himself has been good enough, period. Like, and when I watch him play right now, the athleticism, the low net coverage athleticism, the second stops, the feet, those types of things, I feel like he's trying to make himself big and hope that the puck hits him. And that works. It does. But if you're off just a little bit, you need your athletic ability to take over. And there's just everything's off just a shade. Even those two goals late in the third period last night, if you look at where he is in the net, he's a big body. I'm hoping that he bites off more of a puck on both those goals, to be honest with you.
When you look at and size up the Flames, the Blues, the Canucks, and the Utah Hockey Club, because that's where we're at here, Books, how would you power rank the likelihood of each team being the last club standing in this race for the second wild card spot at West?
First of all, I'm shocked that we're having this conversation. I never thought that it would get to, I don't think, you know, at the beginning of the year we'd have this conversation. But having said all that, I think the Calgary Flames have got, you know, Utah's there too. They're figuring, you can see how Utah's figuring it out, right? And they should be figuring it out. It's taken a long time. And they got a lot on the horizon. They're going to be fascinating to come trade deadline. So we'll circle back on that, because they got so many assets. But I just think that the Calgary Flames, with Dustin Wolf, the way that he's playing, this guy just wins at every stop. He wins awards at every stop. And that team, they rebound. Similar to Montreal right now, if they have an off night, they come back strong the next night. They don't have very many bad days, as I discussed it as a group. They pull for each other. I think that's the team. I love their energy. I wouldn't make a lot of changes if I'm Calgary, because I think you go into the fight together and you finish it off as best you can. But they're not going away, and they got three games in hand, two or three games in hand of most of those teams.
What about Utah? I'm Team Utah. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm buyer beware on Utah. Still not convinced that a couple of the guys up front necessarily have it. But they're youngsters, the Clayton Kellers, obviously. You know, they got a lot going on.
They got the juice, man. Books, they got the juice.
They do have the juice. They, you know, on paper and really, really overall, they should be able to surpass Calgary, you know, with that roster, no doubt. You know, we'll see what they do come trade deadline time. I just, the energy and the compete of the Calgary Flames, and maybe I'm biased because they're a Canadian team. I'm not trying to be, but I really respect it.
Books, always a pleasure, man. Thank you for joining us again. Maybe by next week we'll be chatting. We'll be breaking down a return in the JT Miller deal. We'll see, huh?
Maybe next week we can have 20 minutes of really good, like, happy talk. Like,
absolutely.
Happy day. That'd be great.
I guess we'll be talking about a different team, I guess, if that's the case. But we'll figure it out. One of these days it'll happen for us. Books, thanks, man. We'll chat next week.
Great, boys. Take care. Thanks for having me on.
That is Jason Bukala from Sportsnet, and former director of amateur scouting in the NHL, weighing in on the Canucks and their predicament right now. We'll take a break here. Final segment coming up. We'll do the whiteboard. Also might want to hear a little bit of Canucks practice audio as they were on the ice today. We'll see if we have time for that. But I've seen a couple of interesting quotes out there from Rick Tocchet. So maybe some audio, but we'll do the whiteboard for sure on the other side here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650.